The 9 till Noon Show on Highland Radio.
And welcome back to the 9 till Noon Show. It's Michaela Clark in this morning for Greg Hughes. Having a look at some of your comments now. I agree totally with Mary T. We are not looking after our history. There are many local places of great historical importance being ignored. When I visit an area, even if I am just passing through, I seek out and visit these places. I have zero interest in going to see modern buildings. They're more interested in building bicycle sheds. A listener says there are long tailbacks in Burt due to roadworks. Another says, I was travelling from Carrickfinn and saw a car from the north disposing of a child's nappy out the window while they were driving. People need to respect our county and our area. I find that people from Northern Ireland don't respect our area. Do they even contribute to the local economy? Well, I'm sure they do whenever we're visiting and spending money in local businesses, but that is totally unacceptable, throwing a nappy out a car window. Another listener says there are not sufficient and easily accessible facilities such as toilets at all major natural attractions, especially in more remote areas. I see both sides of the coping coin. I'm a motorhome owner and the lack of facilities for camping and motorhoming in Ireland is awful. I don't think people realise the money motorhomes spend in the communities they visit. We enjoy the high life when we're in towns and villages and mostly eat out of takeaways. That's a lot of money going into local communities. On Monday we stayed in Dunloe in the car park. There were 8 or 9 vans in some foreign in some form. No one was sitting in their vans. They are all in local pubs and restaurants. We don't need facilities like tents, do we? Mostly need to empty waste. Some nights we book into campsites, fill up fresh and empty black and grey water. It's a growing economy with little or no facilities. This is going to lead to problems. However, if managed properly, it could be of great benefit to Donegal tourism. More and more foreign tourists are discovering Donegal via motorhoming. We need to plan ahead and tap into this sector. In relation to tent camping, most campers are considerate of the environment. However, like everything else in life, a few will spoil it. They have no regards for nature or the environment, and you can put up as many signs as you want, they will pay no heed. It's a shame that honest campers taking their children away to enjoy nature are likely to be the losers here, as they have decency and would adhere to signs. However, the rogue campers abuse the sand dunes even when toilets are provided. They discard their rubbish and drug paraphernalia across the land for others to deal with. Setting locals with their disgusting ways. I don't know what the solution is. I think we should have rangers on our beaches in summer months. Nip it in the bud, sell permits for people to camp. No permit, no camping. And this is a way to generate enough income to man this. It would only take a few campers to be moved on for them to realise, oh, Donegal are serious about implementing camping policies. It will help to filter out the rogues. Permits could be linked to a credit card or address. One thing is for sure, the county needs to react and hopefully in a positive way to bring in income and provide a safe, environmentally friendly option for campers of every description. That is the thing about, you know, putting up these signs. There's obviously no one to police it. And, you know, if there were rangers in place, you know, people would, I suppose, wouldn't be as willing to dump their rubbish. And that's a good idea, you know, so your camper van is obviously linked to your credit card or address through the purchasing of a permit. And then that would, you know, deter people, hopefully, you would think, from dumping rubbish, because they know that they can link back to who could be responsible. The whole area of Gidor Bay is covered by a special area of conservation, an area of outstanding beauty designation, yet there is not a single sign to advertise that. Donegal County Council wrote to me saying they allow occasional camping. What a joke. Neither National Parks and Wildlife or Donegal County Council are doing a thing to enforce the area. Another listener says, if it's private, why is the council cleaning it up? And how many Gardaí are allocated to that area in terms of policing it? Surely if it's private property, the Gardaí should have been called to deal with the people there. I agree very much with Mary T. Our government are anti-Irish. For goodness sake, Ireland and its history is not a commodity for sale. Tourist numbers are well down because Ireland is too expensive and tourists have nowhere to stay. And another listener says, speak for yourself, Irish people who know their history always think about our 1916 when passing the GPO. That was in relation to a comment I made saying that, you know, once you see the GPO for the first time and say you visit the museum, if you're in Dublin, you're kind of rushing about and you do walk past it, you know, like it is any building. But I know everybody has their own view on that. That's just my personal view and how I see it. If I'm in Dublin, I don't, you know, I know Mary T says she would visit it and she would touch the walls. But yeah, I would just see it as part of my route when in Dublin. I'm normally always there for something and rushing about. The campaign for a surgical hub for the Northwest is very much continuing. Yesterday, a delegation of Donegal doctors met with Minister Jennifer Carol McNeill, the Health Minister. I'm joined now by Dr. Paul O'Connell. Consultant anaesthetist at Letterkenny University Hospital. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning, Michaela, and good morning to your listeners, and thank you for having me on your programme.
Not at all. It's a very important issue. So yesterday was a follow-up meeting to a previous one that was held with Minister Jennifer Carol McNeill a couple of weeks ago. How did yesterday's meeting go?
Well, we met the Minister for about 45 minutes. I have to say it was a very productive meeting. It was constructive. It was respectful on both sides. The Minister listened very carefully to the points that we made, and I would say it was quite clear that she had done her homework. She confirmed that no decision had been made as to where a surgical hub for the Northwest would be located, and she also explained that she was very much data-driven and that she would be her decision would be informed by clinical considerations for the most part.
And the Minister last week in Dáil had said that she hasn't received the business case. Is that still the situation?
Yeah, that is my understanding, that no business case has been received from the HSE West Northwest.
And in relation to the Minister saying that it will be data driven, but time surely is of the essence if this case is being put forward for the surgical hub to be located in Sligo. What was her position, or did you put it to her that, you know, we need a timely decision on this now?
Yeah, we discussed the time frame for a decision, and she wouldn't commit to an exact time frame, but she did indicate that it would be within the reasonably short term.
And were you able to put it to the Minister, the comments that were made by Minister of State Marian Harkin last week on the show with Greg?
I didn't hear the programme with Marian Harkin, but I understand that she made some reference to the programme for government. But look, I'm a clinician, and we met with the Minister yesterday as a group of clinicians. And so our job was to present the clinical case. So I'm not au fait with the political considerations.
And in relation to that clinical case, was there further information that you presented yesterday to the Minister?
We presented her with a draft document, which has been authored principally by Mr. Michael Sugru, one of our local breast surgeons. And the document is in response to a HSE report on Model 3 hospital services, which was produced about a year ago. And so Letterkenny was chosen as a pilot site to support and to augment services in Model 3 hospitals. And so we have produced a very detailed document which contains a lot of data, which we have given to the Minister.
And in relation to that time frame, I know she has asked for time to be given. Do you accept this, or would you rather a decision is made now? So, because this is such a campaign, you're doing your jobs every day as well, and it's this added stress if we're going to get a surgical hub or not, particularly for yourselves working at the coalface, but for the wider public in Donegal.
Well, there's no doubt that the surgical hub is an absolutely critical piece of surgical infrastructure, and it drives, you know, the recruitment of surgeons, which in turn supports inpatient surgery and emergency surgery here at Letterkenny. So it is a very, very important piece decision. I wouldn't really expect the Minister to take it quickly, but she has been aware of the various concerns now for the last couple of months. So we would be hopeful of a decision in the short to medium term.
And what is the next step now for yourselves?
We will continue to articulate and advocate for services here in Donegal. it's not really the case that we're not trying to present this as a decision about Donegal versus Sligo. Mm-hmm. Our colleagues in Sligo have an equal need for surgical infrastructure. However, if there is only going to be one surgical hub in the Northwest in the next couple of years, then we think that the data supports Letterkenny.
I'm joined now also by Donegal Deputy Padraig McLaughlin, who is Chief Whip with for Sinn Féin. Padraig, this has been an issue that Oireachtas members seem to be united on as well, and it was raised yesterday in the Dáil, and you had raised it this morning also.
Yeah, I'd like to commend Dr. O'Connor and all the team of consultants in Letterkenny, the GPs who have, you know, who have campaigned for such a long time on behalf of the people of Donegal, who have asked for just fairness, the same services, the same access to services as everybody else across the state. No special treatment, just fairness and equality in healthcare. And they have educated the public representatives, and I've never seen the public representatives in Donegal so united. And, you know, it's crucial. Because we know that our emergency services, our emergency department is under real threat. We have three general surgeons, half of what it was a number of years ago. It cannot be sustained. We can't attract the surgeons that we need to this region. So this is a serious, profound crisis. And, you know, for too many years, it is our view that we've been neglected by the powers that be in the HSE and the Saolta Hospital Group beforehand, who were Galway-centric. You know, they were focused on Galway and to a lesser extent Sligo, and Donegal was out of sight and out of mind. So the one welcome thing in recent months is the move to just have a surgical hub for the entire region. Remember, that's from Malinhead to Roscommon for the entire region. You know, just to be in Sligo has been pushed back on. And we've been generous in Donegal. We've said that, you know, it shouldn't be a divide and conquer. I mean, we are willing to accept two surgical hubs, one in Sligo, one in Letterkenny, mm-hmm. but build at exactly the same time, because we cannot fall further behind in Letterkenny. So we've been generous in Donegal. We didn't play divide and conquer. That's why the comments by Minister Marian Harkin were serious. We've sought urgent clarification, and we've got some degree of assurance from the Minister of Health. She spoke to the doctors last night, but also we have a statement on the record saying she hasn't made a decision yet. But she needs to tell Marian Harkin that this is not a political game. This is not a divide and conquer. This is serious, and it has to be.
And what is your understanding about them comments? Have you had any clarity that it is included in the programme of government?
Well, you see, you can have deals that aren't written down, and that's the problem with the Lowry deal. Much of what they have agreed is not written down. It's not been published. So while they might say the programme for government has a suggestion of a surgical hub for the Northwest, you know, you could have a deal that's not written down. So what we want now is the Taoiseach Micheál Martin negotiated this. It's a pity he's in Japan at the moment. But we need them to say clearly, this is not a political game. This is you know, this is about fairness. This is about facts, data, evidence-based approaches. And if that's taken, then Letterkenny will not be left behind. I'm certain of that. If this is about fairness and objectivity and all of that. But listen, this is much more serious now. Like, people of Donegal will not accept neglect, will not accept second-class citizenship. And the people who have most credit in all of this are the likes of Dr. O'Connor and his team, you know, Michael Sugri, Louise Moore and Anya Keating, just to mention but mm-hmm. a few. The full team of consultants have signed that letter. GPs across Donegal have signed that letter. And, you know, they have stood up for our people, and they deserve 100% support from all of us till we get what we deserve, which is justice, fairness, equality for our people in Donegal.
And you were scheduled to, I didn't hear the Dáil debate earlier because I was on air, you were scheduled to raise the issue with the Health Minister this morning. How did that go?
Yeah, what we had was the Minister for State, Michael Moynihan, read a statement out and, you know, basically said that the Minister is engaging with doctors, public representatives, campaigners in Donegal, that she hasn't made a decision yet. You know, but what we do need is the Minister for Health to have a conversation, Minister Marian Harkin, and say, listen, I'm not aware of any deal. There's no mm-hmm. deal done here. So we need clarification on that. You know, that was very concerning, what we said last Friday, because it becomes then a political game. It becomes a backroom deal, being referred to as grubby deal between Michael Lowry's independents to get this government back
into place. But then at the heart of that is people's health, and it's the staff that are dealing with these pressures and that know they need this surgical hub here.
Absolutely. And I was on Ocean FM earlier this morning, and obviously mostly the people listening to that radio are in Sligo Leitrim. And I said, this isn't about divide and conquer. We're not playing that game. This is about all of the people in the region, from the top of Donegal, from Inishowen and Fannad and West Donegal, right down through into Sligo, Leitrim, North Mayo, Roscommon. All of us need to stand together, right, and demand equality in health services, mostly, of course, in Donegal. We've been mostly failed by these politics, internal HSE politics. We have no more time for side deals, grubby deals. So, listen, hopefully that will be put to bed in the next 24 hours. And I remain confident, but not complacent, that if there's any justice and fairness here, we will have a surgical hub for Letterkenny Hospital.
And how do you see this, Padraig? You'd be more up to speed with the timelines for these decisions. You know, the minister has asked for more time. Once she makes a decision, do you think that, you know, how long would it take then for a surgical hub to be delivered if it were for Sligo or if we were getting two? Would this, if the minister was to decide if we were getting one for Sligo and one for Letterkenny, would that have to be a full business case again?
Well, what we need is we need, if it's going to be Letterkenny and Sligo, it has to be done at exactly the same time. Mm-hmm. We've actually been generous in Donegal. We haven't said this is Sligo versus Letterkenny, but if there's only going to be one surgical hub for the entire Northwest, it would have to be in Letterkenny, clearly based on objective fact. Now, we're being generous in Donegal and we're saying we'll accept two, but at exactly the same time. And this is an important point for the listeners in Donegal. Whenever they talk about an ambulatory centre and the sort of bells and whistles and a much bigger project, that's fine. We all are up for that, but it'll take far too long, far too long. And time is of the essence here. We have three permanent surgeons. We can't attract the surgeons that we need and all the support teams of Letterkenny. We cannot have a message sent out that Letterkenny's fallen even further behind. So it's crucial that we get the surgical hub at exactly the same time as Sligo, at the very least, at the very least. And that's the focus right now. The wider project of a ambulatory centre, that's for cancer services and all the other services. That's great. That's coming down the line. It's, in my view, that will take too long. We haven't got time here to wait for these projects down the line. The other thing to say is that there are six surgical hubs, as you know, already cleared. There's some already operational, two in Dublin, Waterford, Limerick, Cork and Galway. So this is about now delivering equality of access to these services across the entire state. And there's nowhere needs it more, nowhere crying out more than the sixth largest hospital. And I'll say it again, the sixth largest hospital in the state is Letterkenny. It's a major hospital and we cannot treat it anymore like a backwater, like somewhere that's out there in the middle of the Atlantic, you know. So we have to win this battle. We have to remain focused. We have to remain united. And that's why I say none of these side deals, political deals, you know, divide and conquer stuff. We're focused here. I think we can win this battle, but we need to see it home.
And do you see Minister Jennifer Carroll McNeill as a minister that is open to this? She spoke in the Dáil last week saying that it was very important for her to visit Donegal, you know, to understand the geography, to understand the situation here. So do you believe that she will truly take all this into consideration?
Well, listen, I'm listening to the doctors and consultants. They've had two meetings with her now. They believe she's been respectful. She's engaging. She's basing it on the facts. So that is encouraging, I have to say. And for me, this is about, you know, fairness and equality for the people of Donegal. And if the minister listens to the facts, if she listens to the facts presented by, you know, the likes of Dr. O'Connor here, Dr. Sugru, who has put together a tremendous body of work looking at Letterkenny Hospital and how these, Letterkenny's a Model 3 hospital. It's not a top tier Model 4 hospital. And that means we get failed. We're falling further and further behind. So if they're listened to, if our doctors, consultants are listened to, if the facts are listened to, then we will get what we deserve and what we're entitled to here. So for me, it's about staying the course, staying united, staying focused, and not backing down until we get the surgical hub is just point one. That's the first objective. After that, we need to get more beds, more doctors, more nurses. We need equality in funding. Letterkenny Hospital has been neglected in terms of funding. Mm-hmm. If you compare Letterkenny with other hospitals across the state that are Model 3, we are neglected, failed. So this is just the first stage, but it is this battle must be won, and the surgical hub must be delivered for Letterkenny to save our emergency department, save our services, and then take it from there.
Dr. Paul O'Connor, just back to yourself briefly. I'm sure you would echo the comments there that Deputy McLaughlin was making. What do you feel the future looks like if this surgical hub isn't delivered?
You couldn't overstate the importance of the surgical hub. It drives recruitment of surgeons at a time when there are not enough surgeons in Ireland. And the surgeons that we do have are more inclined to work in Model 4 hospitals, or in hospitals that are closely located in Dublin, Cork and Galway or Limerick, places like that. So the challenge for the recruitment of surgeons in Letterkenny is and in other places like Sligo and Mayo and maybe Kerry, you know, it's not just Letterkenny, but the challenge of recruitment of recruiting surgeons is huge. And if we don't have the surgical infrastructure, then we're likely to fail in that recruitment.
And we had a caller yesterday, Emma Gova. She was speaking about, you know, the fear if one of her children takes sick, the fear of having to go to the hospital. But I'm sure, you know, there's a sense of fear among yourselves as well. You are under so much pressure providing that care. And, you know, can you sustain this level?
Subject to adequate manpower in terms of doctors and nurses and other health professionals, then of course. But naturally, you know, it's a dynamic area and it changes, and there are stresses, particularly with regard to recruitment. I mean, I needn't remind your listeners that we don't have a proper motorway or a railway service in Donegal, so that doesn't help, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you both so much for joining me this morning. No doubt we'll be talking more on this topic, and the campaign will continue until there is a final decision made, and hopefully it's the right one for Donegal. Dr. Paul O'Connor, consultant anaesthetist at Letterkenny University Hospital, and Sinn Féin Chief Whip, Donegal Deputy Padraig McLaughlin. Thank you both for speaking to me this morning. It is the 9 till noon show, and it's Michaela Clark in today for Greg Hughes. I'm delighted now to be joined, well, I can see one half anyway, of the TikTok stars Tig and Derry Fleming. I'll say good morning to you first. Derry, how are you? Oh, there
good
we
morning.
Go.
Fantastic. Sun shining here in the kingdom. How are you?
Good, good, good. Yeah, it's not shining too much here now at the minute. Just as you mentioned the kingdom, I'm from Tyrone, so I suppose... Yes.
Whoa. So you can see here, Derry, bring it.
He's wrapping the colours. So I'm talking to you both today about the Returns Small Town Big Difference campaign. So tell me a bit about this.
It was unbelievable. Like, I mean, say we visited 10 finalists there and the locations.
Over Ireland.
And it was just the communities and the spirit is just unreal as to what is happening with all this returns.
Yeah, so we went from Kerry up to Yee in Donegal. We went over to Meath. We went to Galway, Mayo, Carlow. We went all over and like that. The furthest one was Donegal, and I must say, Buncrana FC Hearts.
Yes.
FC Hearts. We got a warm welcome above there, and it was only a whistling stop now, but I must say it was gorgeous above. Similar to Kerry.
You're keeping everybody happy.
They are. But no, I must say, like, in Buncrana, their hearts, the club president, Jonathan, he kind of showed us around and we spoke to all the kids, every age group. And just like the initiative there from all the communities all over Ireland, they're raising funds simply by just recycling bottles. And they've started a program there for Football for All. So it's all
inclusive. Like, and I thought that was fantastic. Like, they brought everybody in.
Yeah. We met Matthew, the star there. And like that, it's just amazing that myself and Dad can go around to these communities and just chat and hear their story and share it then online as well. It's amazing.
Yeah.
They put this fella through his pits.
I was sweating above. Jesus, the next generation coming through above there is unbelievable.
But it is a great initiative because it's raising awareness of the return scheme and it's bringing communities together as well. And I suppose it's encouraging other people to, you know, I hadn't heard of, you know, communities doing this in terms of the return scheme. So it's given others the idea to do that. And I suppose that's all positive.
Exactly. And like that, even there in Mayo, we visited a lovely community up in Ahagóhar. Is that it?
Ahagóhar.
And like they're just starting off building a running track. And now it is all gravel and stuff.
Yeah. But
all the kids were so happy and proud to show us what they've done. And they built an obstacle course first and they put us through our paces. But they were just so proud of what they've done with what they've raised so far. And it's just amazing like that. As you said, look, even kids getting involved at an early age, it's very, very much a great initiative for kids coming through as well, isn't it?
It's unreal, like, and then like the impact it has on the environment as well, like
yeah.
it's so positive all round. Plus, it's actually a social gathering as well for yeah. people in rural areas. Do you know what I mean? It's like the communities are coming together, and then like the most disadvantaged really are benefiting from something that's having a positive impact.
Yeah.
So it's unreal, like the stories, like each place is so different.
Yeah.
And there's such stories out there, like all because of this return initiative.
We went from football
to nursing
homes. Nursing homes to
a special school.
Yeah, in Carrigaline and Cork. And each one it's kind of touched us in a way, like we've kind of, even like since our travels, you know, we've touched base with them and how are they getting on.
Oh, yeah.
It's lovely, like, it's very nice.
And even the Madra there in Galway as well.
With the charity for the dogs and the shelter, yeah. So.
Like every it's positive all around, every place for humans and animals. And like I said, getting back again.
The car was full. We couldn't take any more dogs home to carry this stuff. Yeah.
So Buncrana Hearts FC is one of 10 chosen. So they're a finalist now and they've also got €2,000 as it is at the minute. So what's the next step for them?
So like that, we're kind of going back now. We're going to go through all the 10 finalists and now 5 then will be picked and they will go forward then for the national broadcast. So they'll go on an advert for a return.
They'll be on billboards and buses.
Back to the buses
and everything. Like, but to be quite honest, each and every one of them are all worthy winners.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how you're going to pick 5.
Like, it's a hard job now to narrow it down to 5 because, like I said, each and every community that we visited, it's just unbelievable, like the positiveness.
And
like,
not only that, though, wasn't it 300? And was there over 3,000 entered altogether?
Yeah.
Well, narrowed it down to 300.
Yeah.
And then down to 10. Like, so it is. And then a lot of people are still not aware, like, and these, like, in turn, are actually an example, like, to other communities as to what they can do and how they can benefit, like,
yeah.
in their local community as well.
But even like Absolutely. That, you can apply online on, was it return.ie/communities?
And they can still
receive
a bin and they can start it off themselves.
Okay.
And who knows, like, what they want to do
yeah.
like, in their local community. It's a great fundraiser as well. Like, plus, like I said,
you're recycling
and you're meeting new people who have the same interests and like, and the environment is benefiting everything. Like,
yeah.
So just win all round for everybody. Like,
yeah. So did you enjoy your time in Donegal?
He was singing the hills with Donegal as he came through. But like that, it was very quick. We were up and we were down then, back straight down to Meath in Dublin. But we are definitely going to head back there now. Hopefully, look, if Kerry get through to the final.
Don't know if. Don't you? Don't I ever hear him say if.
And if Donegal might see a green and gold all over Poker.
Can you bring it home, Sam McGuire, this year?
You're confident on that one, are you?
Oh, Dad, we're on the shadow of a doubt.
Well, thank you both so much. I'll wish you well in the semi-final, even though I shouldn't, but...
Oh, you should, of course.
Amir, the same with you, Michaela.
Donegal, all the best.
Yeah.
Remember
yeah.
you said, they need a lot of luck. Now, them might them as much luck as the kingdom we're going to have, like, whatsoever.
Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you. Thank you.
We'll see you.
One kingdom.
And we'll be back again just after this short break. A book by Mary Attenborough and Michael Gallagher is being launched this week. It's titled Unbroken: Secrets, Lies and Enduring Love, a gripping true story of faithfulness and deception and a powerful reminder of the resilience of the human heart. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by both Michael and Mary this morning. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Hi, Michelle.
It'll be handy if I put up your microphones. That would probably help. So we'll take it back to Michael, when you met Mary.
Yeah, 1985 in Earls Court, London. We were members, both members of an anti-apartheid group and also involved in the miners' strike, the miners' strike at the time. So that's where we met, basically.
Support for the miners' strike.
Support for the miners' strike.
Yeah. And Mary, it was all going well until one day Michael was arrested then.
That's right. It was 4 a.m. in the morning on the 28th of October 1996 when our door was bashed down and armed police came into the flat and demanded that we get down on the floor. Of course, it was absolutely terrifying, you know. But I went into a state of shock. I was demanding to see the warrant, as you see on the telly, you know. And it took quite a while before they showed us anything or said any reason that it was being done. And they took Michael away in a white forensic suit.
Yeah, I'm sure that was extremely terrifying. Michael, do you want to go tell us a bit about this arrest, what it was in relation to?
It was in relation to mortar bomb attacks in Heathrow Airport over a five-day period, three separate attacks, mortar attacks into the airport, the complex, rather than the terminal. It was a complex. And, it was related to that. And I was suspected of being involved.
In 1994.
It was an IRA.
Yeah, a few years earlier.
Action, 2 years earlier.
And you did protest your innocence.
Yeah.
And then eventually you told Mary the truth.
Yeah, that's basically it. But I didn't tell her the truth until after the verdict.
Yeah.
2 years later, 2 years later, well, 18 months later. After the verdict. So Mary had campaigned for, and based on my innocence, and there was no way I could have told her anyway in the intervening period, you know, from my arrest because there was, you know, it was been overheard and so on. And there was no, and there would be no defence for me. So, yeah, So that's I told Mary. So that was the crux of the really the whole story. You know whether and Mary had campaigned. Mary had campaigned both publicly and used her own forensic skills to debunk a lot of the evidence that was against me. Much of it really bogus, you know, but still. Yeah. It had to be knocked down, you see. So I'd maybe done all that. And all the time when I was imprisoned, I was under this great weight that I was actually guilty. But Mary thought I was innocent.
Yeah.
You know.
And Mary, we'll get to your reaction to that. But during that time that Michael was in prison, what was that like for you? You know, you understood he was innocent, you were fighting for his release and to be proven innocent, more or less. It was a completely different time back then than what it is now.
Yes, that's right. I was totally convinced that he was innocent. Well, he told me that he was, of course. But also, it's dealt with in the book that Michael was a recovering alcoholic. And I felt that he wasn't really stable enough to be taken on by we were told by the British police themselves was supposed to be this super efficient organisation, which was the IRA.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt it was he was an unlikely candidate anyway, you know, and on top of that, of course, he said he was innocent. And he was writing a book, and one of the topics he wanted to write about was about being an IRA fixer, which of course was what he was accused of. And they'd actually picked up us talking about this storyline because they'd bugged our flat.
Right.
So this added yet again a layer of them just being confused between reality and fiction, as it was. But it turned out this is the double bluff, really, that it was a fiction, but it was based on reality, which is what the police were claiming.
Yeah. And how difficult did you find it during your campaign? against this decision?
It was hard, you know, because at first I didn't have anywhere to live. They took my flat for 3 weeks. It was only one room, but they decided they had to keep it for 3 weeks, which was ludicrous, okay. Which was obviously just to annoy me. So they did give me a hotel room, which is something, but of course you're displaced from everything. Yeah. You know, you haven't got
and
anything.
Especially the distress of Michael being in prison and you left there, you know, effectively on your own.
That's
the distress
right.
of that, and then in a different place to live then.
That's right. And then I lost my job because it was it came out mm-hmm. about the incident. But I was able to get another one. I was given notice, but that's yet more strain because you've got yeah. to be looking for another job. And then I had to try and get bail money for him, which was sureties. And we raised £500,000 in bail money.
And that was it's a massive amount of money now, never mind
yeah,
back then.
That's right, yes. And of course, I had to call on friends and family, Michael's family, my family, and I was explaining the lack of evidence against mm-hmm. Michael and also, of course, that he was innocent and it was completely ludicrous. It was on the basis of my reassurances that people were putting forward the money as sureties. They didn't actually have to hand the money out over. It was mainly equity
so
in houses.
Yeah.
If you could prove you had the money. And he did eventually get bail in January 1997 for 6 months he got bail, and that was great because we thought then the whole thing was over mm-hmm. you know, because
yeah.
nobody gets bail when they're on an IRA
yeah if they're that much of a danger yeah.
yeah that's right. So it was clear that the judge felt there was no evidence against him, and we thought this is it, it's going to be the end of it, and that was a good, you know, a happy time. That's a happy time in the
yeah.
book. Yeah.
And Mary, then when that moment came, when Michael revealed that he was involved, how did that feel for you?
Well, it wasn't just the deception to me. It was that it might appear that I'd deceived my family and his family. And it was really shattering, you know, and I felt at that moment that I should leave him.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd been together for 11 years and he's eloquent, funny, witty, you know, a great person yeah. to be around. He told me to say that, by the way.
Michael's laughing here. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
We had a great... We still have a great relationship,
yeah.
you know. And so it was almost... it was an impossible decision. On the one hand, I thought, I have to leave him. This is going too far.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I just couldn't face that decision.
But it just shows how strong your bond was, the love that was there, that,
yeah.
you know, despite this, despite the years of deception, you know, you couldn't move on. And I suppose that's what love is. You accept someone no matter what they've done.
Yes.
Within reason sometimes.
I'm glad you say that because that's what I feel. You know, it is, love is about forgiveness. Mm-hmm. It's funny that the film, The Love Story, the tagline is, love is never having to say you're sorry. I don't know why, but he did say he was sorry.
Yeah.
And I think that's the important thing. And that's how I was able to move on. Although I do occasionally throw it back at him, obviously.
hold it against you, Michael. We're jumping forward now a bit just because of time constraints. But Michael, you were released. You moved from a prison in England to Ireland, and then you were released then under the Good Friday Agreement.
Yeah.
And how has your life been now since you've rebuilt your life together?
Yeah, well, we already had a place, and we'd bought a place in Donegal before my arrest, and it was quite an easy transition as far
yeah.
as that went, to actually be able to relocate. I was actually repatriated in 98, the end of 98, and Mary had got a job in Dublin by this time, you know,
mm-hmm.
and although it was a bit, you know, Mary, you know, having to relocate job wise as well, we were able to adjust fairly easily, you know, because we were going to Fulcara here in Donegal, and it was near my parents' home place,
yeah.
you know, so it was, and so I was half immersed in that culture anyway, you know. So
yeah, it was familiar then.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, so that was okay. And then Mary's background is engineering, mathematical engineering, software.
Yeah.
So we established this between us, using Mary's skills, mostly Mary's skills, to develop this this software. Mary, you'd have to help me here. What kind of software?
Yeah. Well, we started off with a eShop building package, you know, which was launched in 2002, I think it was, wasn't it? And that really didn't go well at the time, you know. So then we moved on to search engine optimization for mm-hmm. small businesses and using a content management system, which is perhaps a bit too technical for, you know.
For us folk. But yeah, you've rebuilt your life now, and I suppose that's, you know, what you've been through. It's a positive then, you know, out the other end, and you're here in Donegal living for how many years now?
25 years, yeah.
That's right.
And we've still got the business going. But, you know, actually started to grow through the small businesses. We're dealing